From Georgia Public Broadcasting, this is On Second Thought. I'm Virginia Prescott. A new series on Discovery Channel is part competition, part history lesson, and part indulgence of a cultural fascination with weaponry. Skilled craftsmen are assigned to build traditional weapons, battle axes, swords, and the like, and the winner walks away with $10,000 and the title Master of Arms.
I build historical weapons with historical tools and technology, so I'm going to win this.
I want to try it. This is showing who I am. This is what I do, and I'm going to do whatever I can at this point to win.
The money would be awesome, but I want to prove that I'm among the best.
The weapons are field-tested by a former Special Forces soldier and judged by a panel including Georgia native Trenton Tye. Trenton is a medieval combat-trained blacksmith who runs a professional blacksmith shop in southwest Georgia. And Trenton, thank you for joining us.
I cannot tell you how much I am geeking out right now because GPB has been a part of my life forever, and to finally be on here, I'm more excited about this than I was about being on the Discovery Channel.
Oh, I'm so thrilled to hear that. So how'd I do with that overview? Anything you want to add to the synopsis of Master of Arms?
You know, the medieval combat trained blacksmith portion, God bless those people over there. A lot of folks don't really realize what we do, so they grasp for descriptions. It is true. I have played in the medieval reenactment anything, but a medieval combat trained blacksmith, that just sounds a little...
It sounded pretty juicy to me, actually.
You know, the things we do for show business, huh?
Well, right. Well, the competitors in the show, they make medieval weapons and early firearms, and we learn their historical context. But it's so funny to me, Trenton. I mean, in this age we have precision weaponry, drone warfare, why are we still so captivated by these ancient weapons?
Well, and one thing that kind of, and I'm sure we'll get into this a little bit later, one thing that just kind of drives me nuts is the fact that, you know, these are people that are using their hands to build these things. Forget that they are weapons on that end of it. We just, as humans, tend to be very good at making those. But the fact is, these guys are going out there and in the space of a few hours building things that, you know, most people can't figure out how to knit a pair of socks. Mm-hmm. And these guys are making these incredibly complicated items that actually perform as intended.
So was that the hook for you? Did you get interested in making weaponry, or were you a blacksmith first?
I grew up in Lee County, Georgia, on the Mill Pond Plantation, and I don't think that any young man that's ever been out in the woods that picked up a stick didn't start swinging it like a sword. I mean, it's almost genetic at this point. You know, when I started, you know, I came up in the early 80s with, you know, when... You know, the medieval thing was kind of getting steam, and you see Conan the Barbarian and that terrible, terrible image of them actually casting a sword into the snow, which was absolutely ridiculous. But just the mythos around, you know, the big guy with the sword was awesome, and it basically touched an entire generation. So that's where I kind of jumped on board.
So you started blacksmithing then?
The first time, and this is a pretty cool story, I was 7 years old, and we didn't have a lot of books in South Georgia, but we had a lot of diesel. So they took us to a lot of field trips, right? And we went to a place called Andersonville, Georgia, which is the Civil War, and the National POW Museum is there. And there was a guy that was demonstrating blacksmithing there. His name was J. Pennamore Reichert, and I was fascinated by what he did. And many years later, I would find this man again, the very man I first saw do the work, and he became my master in the craft.
Huh. Wow. So did you start making weapons immediately like that boy that you were?
The first time I ever made it was November morning. A fellow named Danny Minnick was a farrier, and he came out and he said, "Hey, you want to play on the forge?" I'm like, "Blah, blah, 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 of course." And I said, and he put a piece of metal in the fire, and I said, "What I make?" He says, "I don't know, just make something." And so I beat on it a little bit, and I got some epoxy putty. I made a handle. I made my first little knife that looked like an Arabian scimitar. It was terrible. But it was my first piece.
Well, that's part of the thing of this show, though, that the set, these glowing forges and molten metal, fires always burning. There's a kind of inherent drama to that. Do you feel, when you were doing this, part of this, I guess, kind of ancient pursuit?
You know, let me tell you, if you are able to look at one of those fires and see metal do what it does and you are not moved, save your preacher the time, you have no soul. It's just... something that is in us. I mean, fire was the original tool. So again, there is something so deeply primal that when we stare at it, I mean, it speaks to us. So I really don't think we have a choice.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the show. The three contestants in the first episode, they all have this challenge of making a battle axe, and then they get judged on that, and then in the next phase, transforming the axe into a pistol. Here's just a clip from the episode.
These are long days. These are tiring days. There's a lot at stake here, and it's not just $10,000. This is a reputation of whoever is working on this project.
So how do you all find people who have these kind of skills, you know, turning an axe into a pistol? Is there kind of an underground of blacksmithing that the rest of us just don't know about?
It's huge. To give you an idea of what the effect that a lot of these shows have had, about 5 years ago, if you were looking for an antique anvil, you pay about $2 a pound, mm-hmm. right? Now it's over $6 or $7 for used stuff. Like literally, the used stuff is more expensive than the ones you can buy new. I mean, that type of impact, and there's a huge following, and obviously because these shows are becoming more and more popular. So they're out there. And the gentleman in that clip is a guy named Dustin, and I love Dustin. He's actually an alumnus from Forge and Fire, and he is a complete showboat. And, you know, but there's this super subculture of people that can do the work and then people that look good on TV. And Dustin is look here. Dustin had the water bottle pouring it over himself like Flashdance. It was hilarious.
And Dustin, he was the one with all the tattoos, right?
Correct.
Not the okay, because there was a sort of tall, I'm going to say, nerdy looking dude
who was Eric.
He was so sweet, but also he's like a Civil War reenactor or a battle reenactor.
No. Oh, Eric comes and look here. Dustin drew a bear, and this is the other thing that we just can't pack into 44 minutes. Eric's actually a gunsmith at Colonial Williamsburg. Of anybody that Dustin could have drawn to go against, this was not the guy. But both of them did such an incredible job. You're mind's blown about what they can do.
Well, that was quite a challenge. Any other notable weapons stumpers for the contestants on the show?
You know, being able, even the Kentucky long rifle that we did, you know, we're doing some things that are really out of the norm. You know, there's a lot of reenactors out there, and you're familiar with a rifle bayonet, but a Kentucky rifle didn't have that. So just from a technical point of view, we're asking these people to put some weird things together, and that's where just the raw ingenuity comes in. So you can be great at the historical end of it, but then there's this little thing extra. So...
Well, so it's not just guns, but this medieval weapons. This is really big stuff in video games. I'm thinking of Assassin's Creed, Kingdom Come, Mountain Blade. These are games that have been criticized for desensitizing players to violence, even encouraging it among young players. Any criticism for playing into that on this series?
Man, you know, and here's the thing, this should have been a question lined up beforehand because you know, I am a historical blacksmith. I'm a reenactor. I am a gamer. I cut my teeth on the Commodore 64. My Mario Kart is so strong, nobody has a prayer. You know, I come from the old days, and we have grown up with this. We came up with Dungeons and Dragons. You know, if you think that Game of Thrones is popular and it has nothing to do with Dungeons and Dragons, there's a problem there. We call that a glass pipe fallacy because you can only believe that if you're smoking crack. This is part of our culture. It's part of the nerd culture. As big as I am, I came from the debate team. I was not on the football team. This is where we come from. This has been in our DNA, and they talk about, you know, we being desensitized. You know, I can tell you that I know a lot about medieval weaponry. I have not yet gone on a rampage in a suit of armor and a sword on a horseback, you know, and don't plan to in the future. So I think that with the video game thing, that it's a lot of opportunistic politicians taking aim at something that sounds really good but has no merit.
I'm speaking with Trenton Tai. He's a Georgia native and a judge on Discovery's Master of Arms. The show airs Friday nights at 10. Well, Trent, we know that a lot of reality TV isn't quite reality. Much of it is scripted or, let's say, arranged to gin up the gossip and the competition and the stakes. How about on your show? How much is scripted?
There's been a real problem they've had. Again, having come, you know, being a part of Forge and Fire, there's a real problem. And I'm going to tell you that I came into this with a chip on my shoulder, but because I cannot tell you how much I have come to loathe the idea of reality TV. I mean, there's just no two ways about it. And there are plenty of shows that the idea is they're using the format from way back in the day. you know, get these people in there that are so desperate to be on TV because they have no other skills in life, and make them fight. Make them, you know, do some interesting things and cut each other's throat. That's not how it works with craftsmen. I'm going to tell you that there was a particular moment where they gave up with us craftsmen, because as craftsmen, you don't learn anything if you're ugly to everybody else. You know, when you go in, and even if you don't like these guys, they have the abilities that you want. So if you will shut your mouth, respect their position and their knowledge, you may learn something. And that's almost universal. The comment that was made, and this was very funny, because one of the crew on when I was on Forged in Fire was saying, you know, they're just giving up trying to make you guys fight, because the comment was it was like they're all long lost brothers. And that's how it is. I mean, they were fighting to get us to fight, and we're like, well no, we're not going to say anything ugly about them. Did you see what this guy can do? So, and I'm going to tell you that this particular production company, which is Matador, and our showrunner, Brian Nichelle, as big as a chip of shoulders I had on, they have been wonderful. They treated us as judges incredibly, and we got to treat the craftsmen with the respect that they absolutely deserve. You know, running somebody off the show on a rail doesn't happen. You know, we get to showcase what these guys do, because even the first man out, he can do more than anybody else on that studio, and even if he's the first guy out. Hmm. So, you know, it's stunning the respect and the camaraderie that these guys show. And in Master of Arms, you get to see a lot of that.
So you're a little more British baking show than, let's say, Real Housewives of Atlanta, is what
exactly.
I'm hearing.
You know, but it's different for them. We're having to very slowly massage them to this idea that sometimes people like to see the camaraderie and the craft more than the drama.
Okay, so one of the things we like to see is your look, which is a little steampunk. It's a little eccentric. You know, you've got these tiny wireframe glasses and a top hat with feathers. What's the story on the hat?
Oh, my gosh. Okay, so Victorian Christmas in Thomasville, Georgia happens every year. Uh-huh. And I travel and I do blacksmithing demonstrations. I was the smith at the Georgia Renaissance Festival for years. I've been the blacksmith at Stone Mountain. I've even been flown to Los Angeles and San Francisco to perform as a smith. But Victorian Christmas is close to home, and I love going down there with all those folks. And, of course, it's Victorian. Now, everybody keeps saying it's steampunk, but the fact is steampunk is late Victorian.
Came from Victorian, right.
So this was my get-up for down there. And we have a big YouTube channel that we've been filming on for 12 years, and I happened to put that Dad Blame hat on, and the folks loved it, right? So for special occasions, I would put this on. I demonstrated the Perry National Fair, so I put that outfit on. And so we get the opportunity to go do this show, and, man, I'm hyped up. You know, man, I get to actually go be on national television. And I said, okay, what wardrobe options do I need to bring? And the lady goes, well, you've got your outfit, right? And I'm like, please don't let me wear that on national television. So it is this double-edged sword. There are so many people that have called and said how much they love the particular outfit, and it is garish, it is gaudy, it's the most ridiculous thing I've ever put on, but it has become almost an icon, and it has been, you know, the good thing is that for better or worse, there's no doubt who sticks out.
Well, Trent and Ty, you really do stick out, and I want to thank you so much for speaking with us.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Ms. Prescott.
A real pleasure. Trent Ty, Georgia native and judge on Discovery's Masters of Arms. You can catch it Friday nights at 10 on Discovery. We should note the program does depict trained professionals building and testing weapons. Probably best not to try these things at home.